All right, so now we're recording, and let me get you to introduce yourself.
Certainly, I am Thor Hearn, and I'm the founding partner of the True North Law Group.
And you're bringing a lawsuit against the federal government on behalf of landowners who want compensation for the Great Redwood Trail that's being planned to go through their properties here in Mendocino and Humboldt counties. Can you talk about what the landowners want compensation and your fees and possibly relocation fees? So can you talk a little bit about how they would determine how much they would get and what their concerns are?
Certainly. So while the compensation, I mean, while the, well, let me back up a half step. What's gone on is that under a federal program, the federal government has established the Trails Act, which takes private property that would otherwise be owned by private owners, unencumbered by any easement, and it allows it to be used for public recreation and a future transportation corridor. And that's a federal law. And even though in this case it's going to be a state agency or some affiliate of a state agency that actually operates and builds the trail. But the federal government is the government that established it, and the federal government is the government that has the obligation to pay the owners. And that was determined by a United States Supreme Court decision. So the lawsuit that we've brought on behalf of the owners I represent is one where it says, pursuant to that Supreme Court case, federal government must pay compensation for that property it took from the owners. And that's what this lawsuit is. It's filed in the in Washington, D.C., in the United States Court of Federal Claims, and is currently pending before Judge Rommel of that court.
And you said that you have been involved in this type of law for about 30 years now. So what led to this becoming such a specialized area of the law and such a common concern for landowners to be pursuing?
So it give you a short background on the Trails Act, which is important to understand the context. The owners originally in 19 before 1983, the federal government had a Trails Act, and the concern was many railroads no longer needed to operate a railroad over a particular corridor, just like here. This corridor that's becoming the Great Redwoods Trail is no longer needed or could be used for a rail line. It's been long abandoned. It's just not suitable, nor is it needed economically for a train to be running back and forth. So the law is that when a railroad no longer runs, the railroad has an easement to use the property. But when the easement was originally granted to the railroad's interest was limited to an easement, meaning a right of way to run a train. And just as a matter of law, and the conditions that the original landowners established when they granted that interest to the railroad, the property returns to the landowner or their now present day successors in title when the railroad no longer operates. The federal government, Congress in 1983, or before 1983, was concerned about the loss of the nation's rail corridors. So they passed a law saying we want to encourage railroads to turn their railroad easements into public recreational trails. And then they that the problem with that is the United States Supreme Court said, Justice Brennan wrote the decision, it said the problem with that is railroads don't own the land, and that when they no longer run the railroad, they lose any interest in this corridor. So they don't have anything to convert to a public recreational trail. So Congress said that's a problem because we want to preserve these corridors. And so we're going to pass an amendment to the law in 1983 to the Trails Act that says we now are going to take a federal easement, a new easement for public recreation and something they call rail banking, and create that easement across the same strip of land. So by virtue of that, if the Federal Surface Transportation Board, originally it was the Interstate Commerce Commission, but if the Surface Transportation Board issues an order invoking this provision of the federal law, it's called Section 8D of the Trails Act, then the Federal Surface Transportation Board now has jurisdiction over the strip of land. And the Federal Surface Transportation Board can grant a local agency, a private group, the authority to build a trail. And that's what's going on here in the Great Redwood Trail, is you're building a federal corridor across the property, and the federal government is allowing the state agency, but it could be some private group in the future, to operate a public recreational trail across it.
And you mentioned that you're kind of creating a new area of jurisprudence. And so what is it that needs to be created about this area, and what was left out, you know, leaving room for so many lawsuits to be brought by you and the other firms that are representing other landowners along the Great Redwood Trail?
Well, the real problem with the Trails Act was that Congress didn't really think through this in 1983 when they wrote the law. They just really, almost as an afterthought, added a provision in the Trails Act, the Section 8D, where they said, oh, and by the way, if the railroad no longer runs, we'll just have it converted to a public recreational trail. But when they wrote that, they forgot to think through the point that, hey, this is private property you're now taking. And the way the federal government normally takes people's private property is they do it directly. So if they're building a highway or a new library or some federal facility on your property, a post office, for example, they come to you up front and say, we're condemning your property for a post office, for example. Here's what we think it's worth. We'll offer you this amount of money. If you don't agree with us, we can litigate the proper compensation, but we're taking it and we're doing it for this purpose. But that doesn't happen in the Trails Act cases because the federal Congress didn't really think through the fact that they were taking property. So initially, the Trails Act was challenged by property owners. In this case, in Vermont, a family called the Purceaus said, hey, you're taking our property. And the federal government said, oh, no, we're not. We're just regulating this rail corridor. And so it went through a series of decisions all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And it got a unanimous decision of the United States Supreme Court, written by Brennan and then concurred by Justice O'Connor and Stevens and Scalia. It was emphatic about the point that, no, you can't redefine state property law without compensating the owner for what you're taking. So in the before condition, without this federal order, these owners would have enjoyed unencumbered title to their land, and they would have enjoyed the right to use their property and exclude others from it. But because of this federal agency order, there is now a new public rail trail corridor easement across their land, and the federal government has not compensated them, so they file a claim for that compensation. The Supreme Court has said they're entitled to be paid in the Court of Federal Claims. And that's what is the background for this case.
And about how many cases like this have you brought on behalf of approximately how many landowners?
It would be several thousand landowners I've represented in cases around the country since over the past 30 years, from Missouri to California to Texas to Florida, to North Carolina, to New York, New York City, to all around the country, Michigan. So many in many different states.
What's your rate of success?
A very high level of success so far. Many of the cases, because I started representing landowners before much of the law was settled. And much of the law in these cases concerns the question of what interest did the railroad own? And that's a question that's decided by state law. So I've gone to a number of state Supreme Courts, Kansas, Missouri, Florida, where I've had to argue, as well as in federal court, in several of the leading cases on the appeal. I've won in the federal circuit, which is the federal court of appeals that hears any appeal from the Court of Federal Claims.
And what are the main concerns that the landowners have about what damages or how their property values will be reduced after the trail is active?
Right. So the measure of compensation that an owner is due is not just for the value of the strip of land that's encumbered with this new easement, but what is the determination is what we call the before and after test. The Supreme Court has said this to be the test. So you look at the owner's entire parcel of property before the easement, the federal easement was created and before it encumbered the land. And we say, what would somebody in the marketplace, what would a reasonable buyer in the marketplace pay for that property with no easement whatsoever, no railroad easement, no trail easement of any nature? And then what would somebody pay for that same property now in the after condition, now encumbered by that? And so that's going to be very specific for each property. So for some properties, that may, the existence of that easement may deny the owner access to a portion of their property. They may have no more legal access to a portion of their property that would be now landlocked. And if they can't negotiate with the federal government a right to cross that, to build a road across it or whatever, they've lost not just the value of the land encumbered by the easement, but they've lost the value of the land that now is no longer accessible. Other concerns that owners have for which they are entitled to compensation and have been paid compensation in other cases I've represented are when you have to build berms, fencing, buffers, something to protect the adjoining property from this public corridor, because you've now exposed the owner's land to the general public, allowing the it creates a whole host of concerns that are specific to the individual owner, which also, again, turns on the character of the property. So if you have cows or cattle on the property, that creates an issue. You need maybe some additional fencing. All of those issues should be taken into account when you try to put, now what the Supreme Court says, and this is the standard, is the owner should be put in the same pecuniary position he or she would have been in had the government not created this easement. So that takes into account quite a few factors, but that's what we have to take into account to make sure an owner is fairly compensated.
And what about owner liability? Like if they have something like an attractive nuisance on their property, or if they have livestock that menaces people who are walking on the trail, or if they have, you know, a bunch of junk lying around, like yeah. what's their responsibility in terms of liability and,
Well, those are factors that have to be taken into account, and they're a very good question about those kind of unique uses. I actually had a case in Sarasota that involved a junkyard. You would think of an auto salvage yard, and the trail went through it in a way that then exposed it to the public. And what the owner found was that people were coming in and stealing things, but he also had additional liability. He had to go buy additional video surveillance equipment, build additional fence. So again, it's going to be very property specific, but all of those are factors that should be taken into account when you decide how much money the federal government must pay each specific owner to put them in the same financial position they would have been had they not taken it. And so we do that with appraisers, experts, land planners. It also has to do with zoning changes. So if you're under a regime where you can only build if you have so many acres of land that's unencumbered, sometimes creating the easement restricts future development of the entire property. That has to be compensated for as well.
I hadn't even thought about that. And you mentioned access. Can you go into that a little bit more? Because it seems like access to roads, you know, we're thinking about human access, but then there's also the need for animals to access resources.
So yes, access here, and here in this case, we have many properties that are along the river and the rail line, the abandoned rail line and now Great Redwood Trail runs between the river and the rest of the property. So what that does is that restricts the access to the river. I have one owner who's concerned about his ability to fish and get down to the river and cross this public corridor. And so that has to, if there's not a crossing right that is established, a legally enforceable right to cross it, the owner's lost that right. So whether it's to cross to the river, whether it's to cross to a road, and we've had many cases that I've had where the trail corridor now prevents any access to some of the adjoining, even valuable parts of the property, leaves it landlocked. And so that, and they need it for either pasture or for cattle or for whatever use they want. you sometimes the government has to pay for the full value of that landlocked parcel. The question I would ask of each owner is, what do you think a buyer of your property would pay for it now in this condition? So a reasonable, rational, intelligent buyer coming along and say, hey, I'd like to buy your property. Can I, in looking at your property, can I access the river? Oh, what about this driveway that crosses the corridor? Can I use it? Do I have a legal right to use it in the future? Those are the kind of questions that really should be considered to make sure each owner is fairly and fully compensated.
And have you found that the presence of the trails always reduces the value of the property, or does it ever make the property more desirable?
I have not yet found a case where it's made it more desirable or more valuable. In fact, that question's a good one, because the government, in a case I recently won in outside of Atlanta, Georgia, in Covington, Georgia, made the argument that, hey, even though we took this public corridor across your property is more valuable on the marketplace because people would like to have access to this public amenity, a biking, hiking trail. And so we don't really owe you any money. It was a ridiculous argument, I thought, and the judge agreed with me. They said for some people, they had a corridor that ran literally 10 feet below their bedroom window. But they said, but now look at how wonderful it is, because you can just walk right onto the corridor with your bicycle and you don't have to drive and park a car to go hiking or biking. But they didn't take into account the fact that people were now walking 10 feet below her bedroom window. And the judge literally laughed at that argument and said, no, you've taken this from the property owner. You've made them less, your property less valuable. And the most important factor the Supreme Court has found when we talk about value of private property is one of the most fundamental rights to private property is the right to exclude others from your land. It's that right of privacy. It's that right of control. And the fact that the public now has this access to your property is taking from the owner one of the most fundamental rights that they have as an owner of property. And for that, the federal government must pay the owner.
Well, just for a last question, I realized that you just filed this this month, just a couple of weeks ago. Can you summarize what's next and how long you expect this to take to wind its way through the court?
Sure. So this case, we filed it, and it's now been assigned to Judge Rommel. She has some other cases that are similar. We've not yet had a scheduling order. The government will file their answer. But these cases, Trails Act cases, fall into two steps or two phases. The first phase is to confirm the owner's ownership and the government's liability. So that involves basically a legal question of, did the owner who's a plaintiff in the case actually have legal title on the date that the federal government issued the order? We generally win all those arguments. The government sometimes tries to argue that the railroad actually owned the land and the owner and the railroad didn't just have an easement, but actually had title to the fee estate in the land itself. The government normally loses that, except in exceptional cases. So that's the liability stage. Those questions are answered by filing motions and exhibits and copies of deeds with, in this case, Judge Rommel. She'll rule on that. In some cases, the government will agree and stipulate that the owner owned the land and they're obligated to pay. Then the next phase is the compensation phase. At the compensation phase, what we do is to value the property. Typically, the government has an appraiser, we have an appraiser. When I represent landowners, I don't always just involve an appraiser. I often bring in also as appropriate land planners, sometimes foresters, sometimes landscapers, experts to determine the value of a fence, a berm, a buffer, or other measures that are taken to try to put the owner in as close to a whole position as possible and determine what those costs would be. And then that way we can quantify the question in the valuation stage is really what check should the U.S. Treasury write to the specific owner, and what's the basis for that? And so we assemble the relevant experts and appraisers to determine that. And it's multiple components, as we've talked about, that go into that amount.
And I guess here's one more little add-on. I realize that this is far from that stage, but, and so you don't have an idea exactly of how much would be paid to these landowners if they were to prevail, but do you have any comparable instances where you can come up with an estimate of the range of claims?
Certainly. What I would say is this. It is a significant amount of money when you take properly value the property. Again, I go back to, you have to look at the value of the entire property before and the entire value after and the difference. It's not just a per square foot value for the land under the trail easement. And when you take into account the total impact of this corridor on the value of the entire property, it can be very substantial. I mean, again, it's always going to be unique to each property. And that's an important point. Each owner should be very concerned about, how is my property unique? And the owner knows even better than the lawyers or the appraisers what effect this has on their property and what effect it might have on a buyer of their property. And so that's why we always work very closely with owners to make sure we've taken into account all of those factors, because this is their one and only chance to be paid. And what I would say is to think of what, if you were to put your, whether you want to or not, what an owner would put their, would anticipate a buyer of their property paying for it in this after-taking condition. And it would almost certainly be less than if this easement was not there. But making sure we capture all of that in the valuation is the task. But, you know, it's millions of dollars for some properties, many millions in some cases I've had. So it's not an insignificant amount of money. I think, as we're talking, I can't think of cases that are nominal. I mean, there may be one or two, but the normal case, it's quite a bit of compensation.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time and for giving me some history on that.
Certainly. And, it was good to visit with you today.
Yeah. Well, you too, and have a great weekend.
I will. You too, and have a good Christmas and holiday. And I will keep you posted of developments in this case as they go forward. I'll just send you emails and let you know if we have any further developments. I do anticipate, because we've been contacted by a number of other owners, that we'll be filing an amended complaint, adding many more owners to the case. And I'll keep you apprised of that as well.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great.
All right.
You. Okay.
You too. Take care. Bye.